This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source, a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers, and you're welcome to call in to ask questions or make comments during the show. Please ring toll-free 877-876-5227. Again, that is 877-876-5227. And this also works for international calls. You're also welcome to visit my website, towardthelight.org. And it's really an honor to have you with us. And this evening, we've got special guests, Jeff and Jody Long, who have done tremendous work for the near-death community. Welcome to you both. How are you?
Well, we're doing just great, Juliet. It is certainly an honor and a privilege to be a part of your show tonight.
Well, it's really nice to have you with us, and I've really been looking forward to talking to you for two reasons. Of course, the tremendous work that you have done for the near-death community and for the world, and also you've done a lot of work centered on soulmates, so we're going to get into this. But first, what I like to usually do is start by asking my guests about their experiences that led them to do the work that they are doing now. So I know that you have been on the IANS board, and you've been doing a lot of work in research. Is that correct, Jeff?
Oh, that's absolutely correct, Juliet. I've been on the IANS board of directors for about 6 years. I'm not currently on the IANS board of directors, but I've spent a great deal of time there. I've actually only been involved in the NDE community since 1998, so I'm a relative newbie compared to people, including guests you've had on your show in the past, that have been involved in this work for 20 years or more. But, certainly I got my first interest was relatively recent.
And what was the catalyst? What brought that on for you?
Well, that's a good question. My interest in near-death experience began back when I was doing my residency training in my medical specialty of radiation oncology, which is the use of radiation to treat cancer. I was actually at that point in time, many, many years ago, looking up an article in one of our major medical journals, and just happened, purely by coincidence, to discover the title of an article which said talked about near-death experiences. And I was immediately fascinated because I had never heard the term before in my life. I was so busy studying to be a doctor and in my specialty training that I simply had no exposure to near-death experience, which, of course, was even by that time a household word all over the world. Well, I was so fascinated by the title of the article, I read the article, and immediately I was fascinated. I said to myself, as a physician, I know that when you're unconscious, you can't, by definition of being unconscious, you can't have these kind of alert, lucid experiences, especially with the fact that they're so ordered and detailed. That seemed absolutely medically inexplicable, and I knew that at that time. I remember almost prophetically thinking as I read about near-death experience for the first time in my life, gosh, why aren't more people doing research on this? So I read a few articles about it at that point in time in my life and was amazed, but really didn't do anything with it because I was certainly very busy studying to be a radiation oncology physician. But then a couple years later, a really interesting thing happened. I had a friend visiting me where I was at in Iowa City at that point in time, and he had his wife with him. And we were having some beers in a lounge on a winter day in Iowa, which is about all you can do on a winter day in Iowa.
Where's Iowa City for all of our international callers and even some Americans who might not know?
Uh-huh. I'm sorry?
Where is Iowa City?
Oh, that's in Iowa. That's geographically in the Midwest of the United States.
Okay.
In the snow belt. It gets hot in the summer and cold in the winter.
Okay.
So anyway, we're just talking but idly, and she mentioned that she had a great many medical allergies and that some years ago she was having an operation and had an allergic reaction to one of the medicines they administered during the operation, and she indicated that she died on the operating room table. But she said it in a very funny way, and so I sat there thinking to myself, what an odd way for her to say that, almost mysteriously, instead of matter-of-factly or fearfully. And I said, huh, I wonder if she had one of those near-death experience things I read about several years ago, which it was at that time. And I thought to myself, I'll look nuts if I ask about something that crazy, but if I don't ask, I'll regret it. So I said, what the heck, I'll ask. So I said, well, did something happen when you died? And she said, why, yes, something did. She went on to describe an experience in which she coded, her heart stopped, on the operating room table, her point of consciousness separated from her body. She then drifted from the operating room, which is unusual, and her point of consciousness drifted to the nursing station of the nursing area, which was taking care of her while she was in the hospital. And from that viewpoint, she was able to see and hear what the nurses were doing right at the moment her body was in the operating room, without a pulse, without a heartbeat, as people were frantically trying to resuscitate her. She then went through a tunnel, had a life review, somewhat similar to your very striking NDE, Juliet, very positive, pleasant experience, and it was just mind-boggling to her, and she had no idea what happened to her. So I said, you know, I think you had one of these things called a near-death experience, and I found some articles for her. She talked with Raymond Moody, who first coined the term near-death experience and wrote the first book about it, and ultimately came to understand and be at peace with the fact that, yeah, that's what she had. But me, oh my gosh, I said, this is absolutely amazing. This cannot be. Medically, I knew full well, again, as a physician, that's impossible. That's blatantly beyond anything medical science could even theoretically conceive of. And so I was even more fascinated than ever, and I said, you know, I've got to study this further and come to my own understanding about this. I'm a fairly hard-nosed scientist, and I had to go and study near-death experiences by seeking out the best evidence I possibly could, and I got the idea that the best way to do that would be to set up a website devoted to near-death experience and have people share their accounts. That happened in 1998. Since that time, we've had probably over 900 near-death experiences shared, making it one of the largest collections of near-death experiences in the world. And boy, if there's one thing I learned very, very early in this work, Juliet, near-death experiences are absolutely for real.
Yes, indeed. And let's give out that website, because I think that the work that you have done, both of you, is tremendous. That is NDERF for Near-Death Experience Research Foundation, NDERF.org. It's a great, great site, and you're adding to it all the time, aren't you?
Yeah, that's Jody and up my second full-time job. Every week we download an ever-increasing number of experiences from that site, as well as the two other websites we have. All of them that are near-death experiences, we post and share them with the world. We feel that people that are go out of their way to go through the considerable effort to fill out the NDE form we have on our website, we feel that it is out of integrity and respect for the experiencers and NDE itself. We also want to share those experiences shared with us freely for the whole world to see. And boy, are we ever reaching the world. We're at or above 400,000 pages read a month on the website, so
Whoa.
We are certainly getting the word out.
That's tremendous. And let's give voice to your other two websites as well. It's OBERF, correct? .org?
Absolutely.
Out of Body Experience Research Foundation, .org. Now, how is that for accounts? Do you...
That website, we started developing that after the near-death experience website went up. We were so fascinated with the phenomena, we wanted to study experiences related to near-death experience. And, of course, there's some overlap. So, again, hundreds and hundreds of experiences are posted on that website as well. So, again, a major resource for people interested in the study, especially study of people's particular experiences involving out-of-body experience and other related topics. We have a section there on spiritually transformative experiences and a variety of other related types of phenomena.
That's wonderful. And again, to share with our listeners, the spiritually transformative experience, or STE, is like having a near-death experience, but not having to be ill or incur some kind of trauma. You can just be meditating or listening to music or even sitting with someone you feel a positive connection with, and then all of a sudden you're just completely transformed in that moment, having no sense of space or time, but only experiencing that profound love and sense of total oneness and unity. At least that's been the case with me when I've had my STEs, and they could sometimes be rather frequent too. Have you had such an experience, or is Jody with us? I think she has, correct?
I think our telephone system here is only allowing one line to be on, so I'm not sure Jody's able to be on.
I'm on, but I can't really hear you.
Oh, bless you.
And I've been trying very to hear this, so maybe I think you asked me if I had an OBE.
I was asking if you had a spiritually transformative experience, and what we could do, we could sort of swap you two out in a little while and let Jody speak up, because I want to be fair and I want you both to have equal voice and clarity in this, but we'll get back to you for now, Jeff, and ask you, and let's see, there's one other website, the ADCRF.org, After Death Communications Research Foundation.
That is correct.
Okay.
Again, part of the fascination we had for that very important aspect of near-death experiences, that being where you interact with deceased relatives, often, in fact, almost always, a very joyous reunion and a very positive part of the experience. So we studied that aspect of it with earthly types of experiences, that being after-death communication.
And that's very special, too. That's also one of the areas that I work in a lot and focus on it. And in fact, lately I've been connecting with a lot of very young people, teenagers,
really?
And children, who just so naturally are mediums, and they are able to see deceased relatives and friends, even as other people are not able to. And PMA Tatwater, who is a friend of all of ours, is written a tremendous book about these new kids. And she's going to be on our show on the 26th of June, so everybody will certainly want to tune into that. But I'm wondering if you have had or collected accounts with children who've had ADCs.
Relatively few. These are almost all adults that have shared their experiences at the time they're adults. Occasionally, we do have a parent who has a child that's had an after-death communication. They're absolutely amazed. They get on the internet, they find our website, and know that we are interested in them sharing their experience. So we do have a few collections of children's after-death communications. They're absolutely fascinating. They're very similar to adult accounts, and yet they come, of course, as you've noted, from the innocence of a child very spontaneously, very matter-of-factly, as if it's just sort of a natural part of their life. And sometimes they're just mind-boggling. And even from children, they can have after-death communications in which they, not unlike NDEers, share information or a contact with an individual who is one of their relatives who's deceased, who they didn't even know existed.
Exactly.
Who they didn't even know what they looked like. They had no way to see pictures of them. And yet we have some ADCs from children where after they contact like grandpa or grandmother, they're able to identify grandma or grandpa's mother picture, even if they've never seen it at all in their life, when you line up the pictures before them and let them pick and choose. Absolutely amazing, and certainly highly evidential.
Oh, that's tremendous. Well, have you thought about soliciting more children ADCs? I think the ABCs coming from children is so powerful. And just because lately I've been, just in the past 2-3 weeks, I've encountered a number of young people with ADCs. So I feel like we're kind of getting on to something. There's a whole wave of tremendous information that I think is going to be coming to these kids.
You know, what you're describing, the moment you started talking about that, Juliet, I again, was immediately absolutely impressed, in awe. When you talk to these kids, these kids have got stories that are absolutely important for you, me, and the world to learn about. For goodness sakes, if there's any way that you can have these children's after-death communications recorded, if you could have them written down somewhere, archived, feel free to pass on our after-death communication website. We'll be glad to reference that you referred them if they list that in the website. But anything that we can do, and I agree with you, to help bring forth these very important messages to study a group of these types of experiences, I think could be very, very important. And you're right, I know PMH has done a great deal of work in this area, and it sounds like you're finding some conclusions in your preliminary investigations that are certainly consistent with what she's found also.
Indeed, and there's such a universality and such a connectedness between all of these experiences, and as you as a physician have been able to experience these, to see these constant references in this line, this theme that goes through all of the experiences, I'm sure that it's had a tremendous impact on you in your research, in your studies, in your practice as a physician.
Absolutely. That has been one of the great blessings of my life, although it's been a tremendous amount of work as well. But again, by far more important has been the incredible transformative effect it's had on my life. I mean, don't forget, in 1998, I set up the website because I wanted to learn to see if near-death experience is for real. I didn't even know. I just wanted to study it and research it, if you will, and understand. But my gosh, week after week at this point in time, we get many, many near-death experiences, after-death communications, remarkable spiritually transformative events. One of the things you go away with, even as a relatively hard-nosed scientist, which I am, is that the pattern is absolutely unmistakable. You really don't see a lot of dreamlike variation in the accounts. They're nothing like hallucinations. They're nothing like wishful thinking at all. I mean, the overwhelming persistent concept of a mystical light, the concepts of love, which is, by the way, the number one most common word that's used in these accounts, the incredible spiritually transformative impact of these accounts on the people that share it, has certainly touched the life of both Jody and I, and it's really made a big difference in a way, not in a way you might expect, but it certainly affected my professional life. And here's how. I've actually had the change was slow over many years, and I kind of had to take a step back and go, wow, look what happened to me. One of the things that's happened is that you can't be exposed to this incredible ongoing onslaught of stories week after week of overwhelmingly powerful love and evidence that we're all one and connected and that there's meaning and purpose on our earth, and that we're really here to learn important lessons, largely about love and relationships, but much, much more than that. So I think the constant exposure to this great, great truth, probably the greatest of all truths on earth, from all our websites, is that I, in turn, have found myself transforming into being a much more loving person. I care more, I listen more, I'll work harder for my patients. I'll make sure that they're, to the best of my ability, that they're in a system that is responsive to their needs, that is helpful, and that in turn, in the people that are working with me, are also attentive, caring, and to the greatest extent they can be, loving. I think certainly the other thing it's done for me as a radiation oncologist, the use of radiation to treat cancer, is that it's greatly enhanced my courage in taking care of these patients. I know that many of these patients aren't going to make it. They have a life-threatening illness, and a great many of these people are going to die as a result of their cancer. And yet, I know, as you know, and as your listeners know, death is not the end. It's simply a beginning. There is an afterlife, and it is wonderful. I'm convinced the people that pass on to the other side are in a much better place than you and I, Juliet, as you know.
Oh, you're not going to get an argument out of me on that one, I promise you.
That's great. I didn't think so. But, I mean, if you think about, what if all doctors felt that way? I mean, Juliet, what if every doctor in the entire world had that understanding that has been, you know, which I, believe me, didn't come up de novo on my own intellect or logic, but was taught by the people that had the courage to share with me. And their teaching of me has led me to be a doctor where I can go forth with that kind of courage. I can, by not fearing death, I can help these patients assure that they will have the best life that I can possibly give them with the tools I have in the practice of medicine. I can help have that confidence. I can help have that love and attentiveness, which gives the patient, in turn, courage to face their illness with a little bit more resolve, a little bit more courage, and perhaps a little bit better ability to overcome their cancer than they might have had before. So I think it's kind of a ripple effect, don't you think?
Indeed. And, you know, I wish that when I was dealing with my terminal cancer, I could have had you on my case instead of some of the ones that were on it, because as a result of that, I ended up shutting down and being in the closet, as it were, for a number of years. And it's only a year before you did, actually, in 1997, that I found out about IAMS. And I was telling Peter Schocke, I think it was as a result of seeing the video, somebody showed it to me, Life After Life, that I learned the word near-death experience. I learned about Raymond Moody. I just said, oh, goodness me, these people are just like me. I've been through what they've been through. And so all of this work and the fact that you are a physician and you are more aware now, you are able to apply that awareness to your practice and in your handling your patients, this is tremendous news. And I feel very inspired as a result of that. Now, there's one thing that I remember you were speaking about on another show, and it really kind of perked me up, because someone was asking you about in the ears being able to remember their experiences, and you were indicating that there was a certain number of experiences, a certain percentage, that don't recall their in the ears, the details of them. And what's interesting to me is I was thinking about the fact that a wonderful NDE friend that I know recalled nothing about the NDE that he had when he was only 5 years old. But then as a result of reading PMH Atwater's book, The New Children and the Near-Death Experience, and getting a session with me, he all of a sudden gained total recall of his NDE, of the beings that he saw whilst he was on the other side, and in fact has had more visitations from his guides. He's become a very good medium. So just in 3 years, so many things have opened up for this individual who before then only knew that he had had an NDE and had been in a coma for 8 days. Then, you know, came back.
Wow, that's impressive. You know, and that's, you can just imagine, I mean, can you imagine having such a profound experience as a near-death experience at the age of five? You know, the tragedy, too, is, as I'm sure you discovered in your own life and many others have, especially for a five-year-old, people don't want to hear about it. They'll dismiss it as a dream.
Exactly.
You know, eventually people just shut down and push it out of their consciousness, which is really a tragedy. Thank goodness that there's people like you that are there to help people open up, to remember, and then to manifest what such an incredibly positive and important experience for the rest of their life. That is just really an inspiring story, Juliet.
And, you know, I was just thinking, too, about the fact that maybe some of these children and adults alike experience the amnesia so that they will not, you know, be talking about it and then being subject to the ridicule or the debunking or the rejection and all of that stuff. Because when that happened to me, people were saying, oh, that was just a hallucination. I just said, no, it was not. But consequently, I knew I couldn't speak to these people ever again.
Yeah.
Because they were so set in their ways, they bolded me with the facts my mind has already made up. So it's kind of interesting, you know, again, when they brought this question up with you, and thinking about this, the fact that so many NDEers, and what was the percentage that you said of NDEers that generally do not recall their NDEs?
Well, you know, it's really hard. You know, it's fairly high. It was significant. I don't think I came up with an actual percentage that don't remember their near-death experience. Certainly most people remember it right off the bat, but again, as in the case of the five-year-old you just discussed, they may be forced to suppress the memory of it if other people aren't going to listen, or if it's just going to make their life very, very difficult to impossible to try to share it with other closed-minded people. So,
exactly.
So while I don't have a percentage, you know, it's certainly high. And that's certainly, too, you know, I've always thought, Juliet, just to extend what I think is an excellent observation you've just made here, I've always thought that near-death experiences are likely co-created experiences, that being components of the experience from the actual experiencer, the individual, the person having it, and also some contribution of the experience of that higher consciousness, higher power, divine, as the names have variously described. And I think any time you're in an experience where you're interacting with and co-creating it with an incredibly loving presence, it's entirely plausible that that very loving presence that really wants the best for the experiencer may choose to take away the memory of that near-death experience as being the most loving thing to do because it's not the right time in their life to be processing it or to share it with other people.
That's what I was thinking, too. And in fact, I know you get a squillion NDE accounts, but when you read mine, there was a part where I was actually acknowledging where the being of light asked me to help with things, to help make decisions that would influence and affect other people's lives. And I thought, whoa! And yet, at the same time, I was made to realize we do indeed co-create with the light source.
You know, that's a good point. That's exactly one of the things that happened near the end of your near-death experience. And attention, listeners, if you have not read Juliet's incredible, startling, and absolutely beautiful near-death experience, I strongly encourage you to do that after the show is done, because believe me, we're going to have some really interesting things to talk about. But Juliet, you have an absolutely remarkable, inspiring near-death experience. I hope every single listener after the show goes to your website and looks up your experience, because that's, you know, part of that, you're absolutely right. I mean, there you were being given an extremely, as I recall from your near-death experience, you were with the being of light, and you came to understand that you had an incredibly important mission back here on Earth. You had to carry forward the word. You had to basically co-create in this world to help bring about some important changes, understandings, and truths. Do I have that right?
Oh, absolutely you do. And I still keep wondering, oh, when do I get to go home? And even having had a little NDE since then, and still being really close on the threshold of death, but no matter what, until I have completed this work, at least for this sojourn, I'm not going to get to go home.
Well, I can tell you, speaking for me personally and for a zillion other listeners, we're glad you stayed here. We all have a lot to learn from you, Juliet.
Oh, well, bless you. Well,
keep it up.
I really will, and it's such an honor to do this. And again, my website is toward thelight.org, and of course you can see me here on bbsradio.com, and bless them for having me do this, because it is really important to reach people about this work. And I'm really pleased that we've been talking about, you know, remembering versus not remembering the NDEs, because some people do feel slighted when they can't remember their NDE. But I just feel like it's an important thing to remember. There's a reason for it, not to worry, and it needn't always be so. In other words, any little thing can trigger memory of one's NDE or whatever spiritually transformative experiences they have.
Yeah, and it's certainly helpful to hear shows like this or to read other sources of information about near-death experience. That can help, too. You know, as we talk, I'm vividly reminded of one of the more common types of events that happens during a near-death experience in which people don't remember all of the experience. In some of the very transformative, deep, if you will, transcendent near-death experiences, it's not unusual where they're with a being of light or in unearthly realms, and they're shown or become aware of universal knowledge, how the universe works in enormous detail, oceans of knowledge, and yet almost every single time when their near-death experience is over, they're either told during their experience or are aware afterwards that they are not able to bring back all the knowledge, the incredible depth of knowledge that they were shown or understood during their experience. And in fact, one near-death experiencer, I think, put it very succinctly. He said, of course I couldn't remember all that. It's impossible. He said it would be the equivalent of trying to put an ocean of knowledge in the teacup that is our brain.
Yes. That just makes such sense, because even now I still wrap my brain and wrap memory, you know, for some of this information to come back to me, because I went out there.
Yeah, yours was quite transcendent.
Yes, indeed. And yet at the same time, I've got to trust that when the time is right, some more of this information will come back to me. I'm grateful I was able to get together what I did, and I'm still assimilating that, and I think I will be for the rest of my life on this plane.
You know, and I think that's a real good point. It's not like you have a near-death experience, you're done, you change, you move on. It's sort of like even my work. I never get tired of reading about near-death experiences. There's always seemingly some new nugget of understanding or wisdom or more that I can learn, even after I'm out over 900 near-death experiences that I've read. And I'm sure each one of these individuals having their near-death experience, as you have noticed in your life, continue to grow from it throughout the rest of their life. It's just astonishing, the power of these things. It's sort of that growth that keeps on growing lifelong.
It is, and it always will be, and I think that's true for everyone. Now, another question I would like to ask you, because again, I'm a cancer survivor also. When you are dealing with some of your patients who are maybe more seriously critically ill, I don't know how far along you work with them, especially if you're dealing with radiation. And I was admittedly exposed to that too.
Yeah.
I should be glowing by now. But I wondered if you experience, or observe them, rather, some of them, having these visions or experiences that I refer to as their being in the twilight stage. In other words, they're toggling between dimensions, and they'll be seeing things that we can't see on the physical plane unless we're really attuned to our mediumship, or be communicating with people. Do you follow me?
The so-called deathbed visions or nearing end-of-life experiences?
Exactly.
Yeah, you know what's astounding, Juliet? Over and over as we've talked, I realize how similar our interests are. Well, gosh, now that you brought that up, of course I'm fascinated by that, as you are. We actually have a portion of our website, the OBERF.org website, is devoted to, there's a portion of it devoted to nearing end-of-life experiences. And, oh, absolutely. And, of course, as a cancer doctor, I'm very interested in that because, you know, for those people that don't make it, cancer is a chronic illness, and there's often some period of time before they die in which they're lucid or in which, you know, the life gradually slips away. And so certainly that has been incredibly inspiring to me again, many years ago when I first became aware that these occurred, and then now to have a fairly significant number of these types of experiences we can study. Just exactly like you were saying, Juliet, certainly this doesn't happen for everybody, but certainly for a number of people, the people that are near death will, as you said, slip in and out of this dimension, and very often they'll see other beings. And of course, as your listeners will know that have followed this show, of course they're always deceased beings. These are not hallucinations. These are actual people nearing death that actually interact with deceased beings. And I don't want this to sound frightening or ghost-like. These are very, very loving, very, very positive interactions. I mean, it's like, hey, you're back. You look great. And I get to be with you soon. I mean, it's like, wow, you imagine what the, you know, what that makes these people feel like that are...
Oh, it's like the happiest Christmas or Hanukkah that somebody could go through, seeing someone they love that they've not seen in a long time, and just feeling that amazing love and peace of mind and the freedom that these beings exude to the one who is getting ready to transition. So I wonder if you are able to, you know, assure these patients and let them know that you understand what they're going through and that it's real and valid. How do you handle them?
As a radiation oncologist, we treat almost always people that are not terminally ill. That, in fact, it's not appropriate to treat patients that almost certainly have less than a month to live. So we're really not the branch of cancer care that's associated with caring for people near the end of death. But believe me, I interact a lot with hospice workers and certainly a variety of other people that do care for these people day by day, bedside by bedside, hour by hour during their final days and hours of life.
Yeah.
So I think I sort of am there for my patients indirectly. I certainly talk with any of these people that have any questions about my understandings on this or awareness of the work I do. I'm certainly not the least bit shy about sharing my observations and giving them some good references that they can read. And that helps them, I think, to carry forth this message to their parents, to their patients. And certainly either the relatives and friends of this patients that are dying like that and have these types of beautiful nearing end-of-life experiences or deathbed visions, if you will, the terms are actually synonymous, sometimes that can be very puzzling, occasionally even frightening to people that are there with these patients. But you got to say, no, this is probably about the most beautiful experience that you are going to witness in your life. These are real. This is not a hallucination. You know, it's really amazing. Gosh, Juliet, just recently I heard, yet another account like this where someone had been bedridden and, eyes closed and basically hardly moving and essentially comatose for about a week. And then all of a sudden this person sat up in the bed. That's right, sat up and interacted directly with their deceased mother and just talked, and their eyes lit up, opened. They were smiling and clearly having a very beautiful interaction. And, of course, when this happens, this person died within the hour.
Wow.
Just startling. And this happens over and over and over in the study of these types of experiences. I mean, I think especially for the people interested in near-death experiences, I mean, you take a step back and go, wow, it's not just near-death experiences where we're interacting with that which is greater than ourselves. That happens in your spiritually transformative events, some out-of-body experiences, over and over, and it's just inspiring to be, interacting with these accounts on a weekly basis as I am. And it's just beautiful, beautiful experiences.
Well, that's really so tremendous, and something that I try to encourage people about, too, is that dying is actually not about death at all. Quite the contrary. We more truly live when we leave this body behind, and so there is going to be that upsurge of energy, the vibrating at a higher frequency, having so much clarity, being completely in the knowing and certainty of that love surrounding them at all times. And just what you described is something that I've seen numerous times as well. And so I think it's just critically important that more and more people in medical communities know about this, that these people have not lost their minds, that they're really in touch, they really are conscious, they really are aware. And I figured that because you are in the radiation that you wouldn't see a lot of end of life, but then there are people like me who would sort of, go in and out and in and out, and then finally, boom, I was gone, and then Scotty brought me back down here again, and that was a bit of a disappointment.
I can imagine.
It's something that is, this work is tremendously exciting to do. And I see that we've only got 15 more minutes, so I want to be fair and let Jody speak to us a little bit, if she is available.
Yeah, her work on, we'll go see if we can find Jody here, because her work and what she's done for this whole project is absolutely amazing.
Yes.
I think your listeners would be amazed to hear that our NDE website has been translated into over 20 foreign languages. 20. And that's a direct result of Jody's very important work. She has literally brought the message of near-death experience to the world in a way that I've never seen before. In fact, even this week, Jody brought to me a dramatic magazine in Arabic about near-death experience. Many, many pages of a beautifully colored women's magazine published in one of the Arabic countries. And lo and behold, there's Jody's picture.
Wow.
She helped them find near-death experiencers to talk to, helped work with them to develop an article. And they're among the very pioneering, very first times that people that are in the Arabic-speaking parts of the world hear about near-death experience. There is Jody being a critical part of that whole process. So, yeah, Jody has been, and of course, this is also astonishing. She really didn't know much about near-death experience until she met me back in many, many years ago, about 6 years ago. And my gosh, she's seen the evidence from the original source herself. So it's amazing she's able to do that and continue to be a full-time, hard-working lawyer at the same time, too. So, Juliet, I think both you and her listeners would be very interested in hearing some comments from Jody, and she's right here.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, my pleasure. Here's Jody.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for that kind introduction.
And welcome, Jody. It is so nice to have you with us, and I've really been looking forward to speaking with you because I'm truly excited about this work that you've been doing, especially getting this message all over the world. I'm at your OBERF site right now, and, of course, I frequently go to the NDERF site. It is just mind-boggling what you've been able to pull together. So go ahead, Jody, and tell us a little bit about, you had an STE, I do believe, correct? And what brought you into all of this magic here?
Actually, well, first of all, I wanted to thank you for inviting me onto your show. I got into this, I've always been into it because I grew up this way, I guess. I think when I was younger, I was really, really sick. And I think that even though I didn't remember having a near-death experience, I think I may have been one of those children that walked in both worlds for a while. And so a lot of this just comes very naturally to me, and I grew up with it. And I've had some out-of-body experiences. I've had a lot of really strange paranormal types of experiences. And so, to me, I just take it for granted. I'm not the hardcore scientist that Jeff is.
You sound a lot more like me, that this is just something that's always been real for me throughout my entire life.
Yeah.
And so you started, were you also a part of this brainchild, as it were, for these websites?
Well, yes. What I did was, when I first started on them, I started to rearrange things because my expertise has to be with designing and with color and putting things in certain orders and generally bringing what I felt the message of the NDE really is about. I felt that it was a spiritual message. And so I started to put the spiritual side of it first, and then to try to bring people from all over the world so that everybody can understand that the near-death experience is really about love, peace, brotherhood, togetherness, tolerance, all the wonderful things, the good side of humanity. And I wanted to help bring everybody together with those messages.
Well, I can't think of anything more worthy than that, because you really did describe exactly what has been this, my experiences and observation with the NDEs, and of course I've had a number of OBEs and STEs as well, and every time the prevailing energy or aura around all of this is that love and really feeling the love for everyone and everything, all life, feeling that complete unity and connectedness. And it is just something that, you know, that feeling never leaves you, ever. Do you yourself speak other languages, or how were you able to get people with different languages to submit their NDEs to your site, because I think it's quite stunning. You've even got my NDE in Polish and Spanish, which is wonderful.
Yeah. It was really kind of an odd. Every once in a while, I get some inspirations. And one of the things that I wanted to do is I didn't know how to do it in other languages because I do not speak other languages. And so what I did was I went up to the online translators. And about 3 or 4 years ago, they weren't very good. And they were so bad that people would write me and say, how can you possibly put this in our language? It's such an insult. And then I would write back, and I said, well, sorry, this is the best I can do, but if you want to help me, if you want to volunteer, I'll be more than happy to post anything you want to translate. And so it started with that type of an idea, and I believe Lisa Myler was our first NDEer who really picked up what I call the fire. And we do get translators from all over the world, and they have this spiritual just burning desire to do this work. And so she translated like over 100 of our NDEs and really went to town on it. And then pretty soon we got some French people who really went crazy. I mean, it's just amazing when these people get what I call the fire, the spiritual fire, the burning is just amazing. It just takes over them. And this is like a what I would call almost a spiritual ritual for them. It's a labor of love.
Well, I really think that's tremendous because, you know, we really do need to think internationally, and certainly being that I am from another country and living in a foreign country, I always tend to think global and not just inside the beautiful box that I live in, as it were. So being able to get this message out is tremendous, and I'm so pleased and honored just to have this show so I can reach, so that we can reach people all over the world with this beautiful message. And I'm going to give out your website again to our listeners, NDERF.org, and that stands for Near Death Experience Research Foundation. And it's a wonderful website. I'm looking at it right now. And, of course, I've visited this site a number of times. Then the other one is OBERF, Out of Body Experience Research Foundation.org. And then the third one is ADCRF.org, After Death Communications Research Foundation. And tell me a bit how that came to be, Jody. Is this something that you thought about after doing NDERF? I think it's really tremendous that you've got all of these subjects that are featured here.
Well, what happened was Jeff had pioneered all three of them, and he had developed them, but he didn't really have the interest in the OBERF at the time, and he was pretty busy, so he concentrated on the other two. And then when I came on board, I said, you know, we have so many really cool experiences that are coming through the near-death experience website. Why don't we take anything that's not a near-death experience or an after-death communication, why don't we take that and instead of just making the out-of-body experience website into just out-of-body, why don't we study the whole spectrum of human experiences and see just how they're similar and how they're different and see if there's some kind of a classification you can give to these types of experiences. And so the OBERF website quickly became the one that if it's not a near-death experience or an after-death communication, then it would go on there. And so we have everything else, like the flotsam and jetsam. It's of human experiences. It's everything else that's not the other two websites.
This is great. You know, so I'm really excited as I'm looking at these because you've got, looks like you feature books and articles and lectures, all kinds of things. Well, right now I'm at the NDERF.org site. You've just got a wealth of resources on this site, and I'm so pleased about this. And you've also got audio, don't you, on these?
Yes.
Where
that came as a result of one of our readers, or somebody who I believe he said, you know, we would really appreciate it if you would have some audio NDEs on here so that we could listen to them.
Well, that's very good for those of us who are visually impaired and you know, I'm gratefully unable to read some, but I do read slowly. And there are a number of people who can't read at all, but they'd like to have access to this material. Roughly how many of the NDEs do you turn into an audio presentation?
I think we have maybe about maybe 6 or 7.
Okay.
We haven't, excuse me, if we have other people who want to volunteer and give us some WAV files that they've read off the website, we'd be more than happy to post them, but we just really haven't had time. It's all I can do to keep up with all of the translators.
Oh, I can see. I mean,
I have probably about 200 people who have volunteered as translators, and active at any given time is probably about 20 or 30. So they keep me really busy.
Well, God love you, my dear. Working as a solicitor, as we say in my country, as a lawyer, and also doing these sites, so you've got a lot on your plate, and I commend you. I'm so in awe of this work that you are doing. Why don't you tell our listeners how they can reach you?
On the website, you can reach us through contacting on the website, or you can reach us by email, and that's at enderf.org.
Oh, you're talking about the email address?
Oh, I wasn't sure what you wanted.
Yes, your email address, and of course, as we've been mentioning, your website, enderf.org, is the website. And if people, oh, I'm seeing it here, electronic mail, send an email to enderf@enderf.org. And people would use that to submit information to you or ask questions, any sort of communications, correct?
That is correct. We also have a portion on there. We do have a forum, a bulletin board. If they have questions or would like to be part of like-minded people, it's a really great resource for people to bounce ideas off of other people. And we also have there's like a share NDE form that people who want to talk about their near-death experience, we ask them a bunch of questions and they can go and fill them out, and then we put them into our research database. And then we do research on the actual near-death experience.
That's wonderful. Now, are there any special events that are coming up with either of you, or workshops or seminars? Well, of course, we've got the IANS conference coming up, but are you participating in that? Please forgive me for not remembering. I keep reading all this stuff and trying to remember what's what here.
Well, this one happens to be one for doctors.
Yes.
And so Dr. Jeff will be there. I'll be there, but I won't be participating. For once, I don't have to do anything, and I can just sit back and I can listen.
Oh, bless you, and just take it all in.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of nice because when you have to prepare for any kind of speech, you spend probably a good day just working on the speech, and then you miss all the socializations because you're working on it.
And again, I think that isn't that 25th through the 28th October, if my memory serves me correctly, that the IANS annual conference is taking place at the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. So, and what sort of presentation is Jeff going to be giving? Do you know?
I think he's on the line. How about if I let him tell you?
Okay.
We have 2 o'clock.
Yes.
You
hear me?
Yes.
Are you there?
We're actually going to have.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, glad you asked. I hope as many of your listeners as possible can come to the annual IONS conference. That's going to be dynamite this year. There's going to be a section devoted to doctors and scientists' research presentation on the NDEs. There's also going to be several more days, which is going to be more of more general public interest. So it's got a little bit of something for everybody. I've been asked to talk a little bit about sort of the overview of near-death experiences in terms of characteristics of Western near-death experiencers. Who has them? What are they like? A little bit about their demographic background. So that'll be a part of what I'll be doing, sort of a global review of the literature of near-death experience. And then later on that week, I'm going to be co-presenting with the IONS president.
I hate to break in on you guys,
but we're going to have to close our show. And thank you so much, Jeff and Jody Long, for being with us. And thank you for joining us, to all of our listeners. And please do remember that only love prevails. Blessings and light.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.